Maria, or The Wrongs of Woman. Chapter 1. Abodes of horror have frequently been described, and castles, filled with specters and chimeras, conjured up by the magic spell of genius to harrow the soul, and absorb the wandering mind. But, formed of such stuff as dreams are made of, what were they to the mansion of despair, in one corner of which Maria sat, endeavoring to recall her scattered thoughts? Surprise, astonishment, that bordered on distraction, seemed to have suspended her faculties, till, waking by degrees to a keen sense of anguish, a whirlwind of rage and indignation roused her torpid pulse. One recollection with frightful velocity following another, threatened to fire her brain, and make her a fit companion for the terrific inhabitants, whose groans and shrieks were no unsubstantial sounds of whistling winds, or startled birds, modulated by a romantic fancy, which amuse while they affright, but such tones of misery as carry a dreadful certainty directly to the heart. What effect must they then have produced on one, true to the touch of sympathy, and tortured by maternal apprehension? Her infant's image was continually floating on Maria's sight, and the first smile of intelligence remembered, as none but a mother, an unhappy mother, can conceive. She heard her half-speaking half-cooing, and felt the little twinkling fingers on her burning bosom, a bosom bursting with the nutriment for which this cherished child might now be pining in vain. From a stranger she could indeed receive the maternal aliment. Maria was grieved at the thought, but who would watch her with a mother's tenderness, a mother's self-denial? The retreating shadows of former sorrows rushed back in a gloomy train, and seemed to be pictured on the walls of her prison, magnified by the state of mind in which they were viewed. Still she mourned for her child, lamented she was a daughter, and anticipated the aggravated ills of life that her sex rendered almost inevitable, even while dreading she was no more. To think that she was blotted out of existence was agony, when the imagination had been long employed to expand her faculties, yet to suppose her turned adrift on an unknown sea, was scarcely less afflicting. After being 2 days the prey of impetuous, varying emotions, Maria began to reflect more calmly on her present situation, for she had actually been rendered incapable of sober reflection, by the discovery of the act of atrocity of which she was the victim. She could not have imagined, that, in all the fermentation of civilized depravity, a similar plot could have entered a human mind. She had been stunned by an unexpected blow, yet life, however joyless, was not to be indolently resigned, or misery endured without exertion, and proudly termed patience. She had hitherto meditated only to point the dart of anguish, and suppress the heart-heavings of indignant nature merely by the force of contempt. Now she endeavored to brace her mind to fortitude, and to ask herself what was to be her employment in her dreary cell? Was it not to effect her escape, to fly to the succor of her child, and to baffle the selfish schemes of her tyrant, her husband? These thoughts roused her sleeping spirit, and the self-possession returned, that seemed to have abandoned her in the infernal solitude into which she had been precipitated. The first emotions of overwhelming impatience began to subside, and resentment gave place to tenderness, and more tranquil meditation, though anger once more stopped the calm current of reflection when she attempted to move her manacled arms. But this was an outrage that could only excite momentary feelings of scorn, which evaporated in a faint smile, for Maria was far from thinking a personal insult the most difficult to endure with magnanimous indifference. She approached the small grated window of her chamber, and for a considerable time only regarded the blue expanse, though it commanded a view of a desolate garden, and of part of a huge pile of buildings, that, after having been suffered, for half a century, to fall to decay, had undergone some clumsy repairs, merely to render it habitable. The ivy had been torn off the turrets, and the stones not wanted to patch up the breaches of time, and exclude the warring elements, left in heaps in the disordered court. Maria contemplated this scene she knew not how long, or rather gazed on the walls, and pondered on her situation. To the master of this most horrid of prisons, she had, soon after her entrance, raved of injustice, in accents that would have justified his treatment, had not a malignant smile, when she appealed to his judgment, with a dreadful conviction stifled her remonstrating complaints. By force, or openly, what could be done? But surely some expedient might occur to an active mind, without any other employment, and possessed of sufficient resolution to put the risk of life into the balance with the chance of freedom. A woman entered in the midst of these reflections, with a firm, deliberate step, strongly marked features, and large black eyes, which she fixed steadily on Maria's, as if she designed to intimidate her, saying at the same time, "You had better sit down and eat your dinner, than look at the clouds." "I have no appetite," replied Maria, who had previously determined to speak mildly. "Why then should I eat?" "But, in spite of that, you must and shall eat something. I have had many ladies under my care, who have resolved to starve themselves, but, soon or late, they They gave up their intent, as they recovered their senses. "Do you really think me mad?" asked Maria, meeting the searching glance of her eye. "Not just now. But what does that prove? Only that you must be the more carefully watched, for appearing at times so reasonable. You have not touched a morsel since you entered the house." Maria sighed intelligibly. Could anything but madness produce such a disgust for food? "Yes, grief, you would not ask the question if you knew what it was." The attendant shook her head, and a ghastly smile of desperate fortitude served as a forcible reply, and made Maria pause, before she added, "Yet I will take some refreshment, I mean not to die. No, I will preserve my senses, and convince even you, sooner than you are aware of, that my intellects have never been disturbed, though the exertion of them may have been suspended by some infernal drug." Doubt gathered still thicker on the brow of her guard, as she attempted to convict her of mistake. "Have patience," exclaimed Maria, with a solemnity that inspired awe. "My God! How have I been schooled into the practice?" A suffocation of voice betrayed the agonizing emotions she was laboring to keep down, and conquering a qualm of disgust, she calmly endeavored to eat enough to prove her docility, perpetually turning to the suspicious female, whose observation she courted, while she was making the bed and adjusting the room. "Come to me often," said Maria, with a tone of persuasion, in consequence of a vague plan that she had hastily adopted, when, after surveying this woman's form and features, she felt convinced that she had an understanding above the common standard, "and believe me mad, till you are obliged to acknowledge the contrary." The woman was no fool, that is, she was superior to her class, nor had misery quite petrified the life's blood of humanity, to which reflections on our own misfortunes only give a more orderly course. The manner, rather than the expostulations, of Maria made a slight suspicion dart into her mind with corresponding sympathy, which various other avocations, and the habit of banishing compunction, prevented her, for the present, from examining more minutely. But when she was told that no person, excepting the physician appointed by her family, was to be permitted to see the lady at the end of the gallery, she opened her keen eyes still wider, and uttered a hem. Before she inquired why, she was briefly told, in reply, that the malady was hereditary, and the fits not occurring but at very long and irregular intervals, she must be carefully watched, for the length of these lucid periods only rendered her more mischievous, when any vexation or caprice brought on the paroxysm of frenzy. Had her master trusted her, it is probable that neither pity nor curiosity would have made her swerve from the straight line of her interest, for she had suffered too much in her intercourse with mankind, not to determine to look for support, rather to humoring their passions, than courting their approbation by the integrity of her conduct. A deadly blight had met her at the very threshold of existence, and the wretchedness of her mother seemed a heavy weight fastened on her innocent neck, to drag her down to perdition. She could not heroically determine to succor an unfortunate, but, offended at the bare supposition that she could be deceived with the same ease as a common servant, she no longer curbed her curiosity, and, though she never seriously fathomed her own intentions, she would sit, every moment she could steal from observation, listening to the tale, which Maria was eager to relate with all the persuasive eloquence of grief. It is so cheering to see a human face, even if little of the divinity of virtue be in it, that Maria anxiously expected the return of the attendant, as of a gleam of light to break the gloom of idleness. Indulged sorrow, she perceived, must blunt or sharpen the faculties to the two opposite extremes, producing stupidity, the moping melancholy of indolence, or the restless activity of a disturbed imagination. She sunk into one state, after being fatigued by the other, till the want of occupation became even more painful than the actual pressure or apprehension of sorrow, and the confinement that froze her into a nook of existence, with an unvaried prospect before her, the most insupportable of evils. The lamp of life seemed to be spending itself to chase the vapors of a dungeon which no art could dissipate. And to what purpose did she rally all her energy? Was not the world a vast prison, and women born slaves? Though she failed immediately to rouse a lively sense of injustice in the mind of her guard, because it had been sophisticated into misanthropy, she touched her heart. Jemima, she had only a claim to a Christian name, which had not procured her any Christian privileges, could patiently hear of Maria's confinement on false pretenses. She had felt the crushing hand of power, hardened by the exercise of injustice, and ceased to wonder at the perversions of the understanding, which systematize oppression, but, when told that her child, only 4 months old, had been torn from her, even while she was discharging the tenderest maternal office, the woman awoke in a bosom long estranged from feminine emotions, and Jemima determined to alleviate all in her power, without hazarding the loss of her place, the sufferings of a wretched mother, apparently injured, and certainly unhappy. A sense of right seems to result from the simplest act of reason, and to preside over the faculties of the mind, like the master sense of feeling, to rectify the rest, but, for the comparison may be carried still farther, how often is the exquisite sensibility of both weakened or destroyed by the vulgar occupations and ignoble pleasures of life? The preserving her situation was, indeed, an important object to Jemima, who had been hunted from hole to hole, as if she had been a beast of prey, or infected with a moral plague. The wages she received, the greater part of which she hoarded, as her only chance for independence, were much more considerable than she could reckon on obtaining anywhere else, were it possible that she, an outcast from society, could be permitted to earn a subsistence in a reputable family. Hearing Maria perpetually complain of listlessness, and the not being able to beguile grief by resuming her customary pursuits, she was easily prevailed on, by compassion, and that involuntary respect for abilities, which those who possess them can never eradicate, to bring her some books and implements for writing. Maria's conversation had amused and interested her, and the natural consequence was a desire, scarcely observed by herself, of obtaining the esteem of a person she admired. The remembrance of better days was rendered more lively, and the sentiments then acquired appearing less romantic than they had for a long period, a spark of hope roused her mind to new activity. How grateful was her attention to Maria! Oppressed by a dead weight of existence, or preyed on by the gnawing worm of discontent, with what eagerness did she endeavor to shorten the long days, which left no traces behind! She seemed to be sailing on the vast ocean of life, without seeing any landmark to indicate the progress of time. To find employment was then to find variety, the animating principle of nature. Chapter 2. Earnestly as Maria endeavored to soothe, by reading, the anguish of her wounded mind, her thoughts would often wander from the subject she was led to discuss, and tears of maternal tenderness obscured the reasoning page. She descanted on the ills which flesh is heir to, with bitterness, when the recollection of her babe was revived by a tale of fictitious woe, that bore any resemblance to her own, and her imagination was continually employed, to conjure up and embody the various phantoms of misery, which folly and vice had let loose on the world. The loss of her babe was the tender string, against other cruel remembrances she labored to steel her bosom, and even a ray of hope, in the midst of her gloomy reveries, would sometimes gleam on the dark horizon of futurity, while persuading herself that she ought to cease to hope, since happiness was nowhere to be found. But of her child, debilitated by the grief with which its mother had been assailed before it saw the light, she could not think without an impatient struggle. "I, alone, by my active tenderness, could have saved," she would exclaim, "from an early blight, this sweet blossom, and, cherishing it, I should have had something still to love." In proportion as other expectations were torn from her, this tender one had been fondly clung to, and knit into her heart. The books she had obtained, were soon devoured, by one who had no other resource to escape from sorrow, and the feverish dreams of ideal wretchedness or felicity, which equally weaken the intoxicated sensibility. Writing was then the only alternative, and she wrote some rhapsodies descriptive of the state of her mind, but the events of her past life pressing on her, she resolved circumstantially to relate them, with the sentiments that experience, and more matured reason, would naturally suggest. They might perhaps instruct her daughter, and shield her from the misery, the tyranny, her mother knew not how to avoid. This thought gave life to her diction. Her soul flowed into it, and she soon found the task of recollecting almost obliterated impressions very interesting. She lived again in the revived emotions of youth, and forgot her present in the retrospect of sorrows that had assumed an unalterable character. Though this employment lightened the weight of time, yet, never losing sight of her main object, Maria did not allow any opportunity to slip of winning on the affections of Jemima, for she discovered in her a strength of mind that excited her esteem, clouded as it was by the misanthropy of despair. An insulated being, from the misfortune of her birth, she despised and preyed on the society by which she had been oppressed, and loved not her fellow creatures, because she had never been beloved. No mother had ever fondled her, no father or brother had protected her from outrage, and the man who had plunged her into infamy, and deserted her when she stood in greatest need of support, deigned not to smooth with kindness the road to ruin. Thus degraded, was she let loose on the world, and virtue, never nurtured by affection, assume the stern aspect of selfish independence. This general view of her life, Maria gathered from her exclamations and dry remarks. Jemima indeed displayed a strange mixture of interest and suspicion, for she would listen to her with earnestness, and then suddenly interrupt the conversation, as if afraid of resigning, by giving way to her sympathy, her dear-bought knowledge of the world. Maria alluded to the possibility of an escape, and mentioned a compensation, or reward, but the style in which she was repulsed made her cautious, and determined not to renew the subject, till she knew more of the character she had to work on. Jemima's countenance, and dark hints, seemed to say, "You are an extraordinary woman, but let me consider, this may only be one of your lucid intervals." Nay, the very energy of Maria's character, made her suspect that the extraordinary animation she perceived might be the effect of madness. Should her husband then substantiate his charge, and get possession of her estate, from whence would come the promised annuity, or more desired protection? Besides, might not a woman, anxious to escape, conceal some of the circumstances which made against her? Was truth to be expected from one who had been entrapped, kidnapped, in the most fraudulent manner? In this train Jemima continued to argue, the moment after compassion and respect seemed to make her swerve, and she still resolved not to be wrought on to do more than soften the rigor of confinement, till she could advance on surer ground. Maria was not permitted to walk in the garden, but sometimes, from her window, she turned her eyes from the gloomy walls, in which she pined life away, on the poor wretches who strayed along the walks, and contemplated the most terrific of ruins that of a human soul. What is the view of the fallen column, the moldering arch, of the most exquisite workmanship, when compared with this living memento of the fragility, the instability, of reason, and the wild luxuriancy of noxious passions? Enthusiasm turned adrift, like some rich stream overflowing its banks, rushes forward with destructive velocity, inspiring a sublime concentration of thought. Thus thought Maria, these are the ravages over which humanity must ever mournfully ponder, with a degree of anguish not excited by crumbling marble, or cankering brass, unfaithful to the trust of monumental fame. It is not over the decaying productions of the mind, embodied with the happiest heart, we grieve most bitterly. The view of what has been done by man, produces a melancholy, yet aggrandizing, sense of what remains to be achieved by human intellect, but a mental convulsion, which, like the devastation of an earthquake, throws all the elements of thought and imagination into confusion, makes contemplation giddy, and we fearfully ask on what ground we ourselves stand. Melancholy and imbecility marked the features of the wretches allowed to breathe at large, for the frantic, those who in a strong imagination had lost a sense of woe, were closely confined. The playful tricks and mischievous devices of their disturbed fancy, that suddenly broke out, could not be guarded against, when they were permitted to enjoy any portion of freedom, for, so active was their imagination, that every new object which accidentally struck their senses, awoke to frenzy their restless passions, as Maria learned from the burden of their incessant ravings. Sometimes, with a strict injunction of silence, Jemima would allow Maria, at the close of evening, to stray along the narrow avenues that separated the dungeon-like apartments, leaning on her arm. What a change of scene! Maria wished to pass the threshold of her prison, yet, when by chance she met the eye of rage glaring on her, yet unfaithful to its office, she shrunk back with more horror and affright, than if she had stumbled over a mangled corpse. Her busy fancy pictured the misery of a fond heart, watching over a friend thus estranged, absent, though present over a poor wretch lost to reason and the social joys of existence, and losing all consciousness of misery in its excess. What a task, to watch the light of reason quivering in the eye, or with agonizing expectation to catch the beam of recollection, tantalized by hope, only to feel despair more keenly, at finding a much-loved face or voice, suddenly remembered, or pathetically implored, only to be immediately forgotten, or viewed with indifference or abhorrence. The heart-rending sigh of melancholy sunk into her soul, and when she retired to rest, the petrified figure she had encountered, the only human form she was doomed to observe, haunting her dreams with tales of mysterious wrongs, made her wish to sleep to dream no more. Day after day rolled away, and tedious as the present moment appeared, they passed in such an unvaried tenor, Maria was surprised to find that she had already been 6 weeks buried alive, and yet had such faint hopes of effecting her enlargement. She was, earnestly as she had sought for employment, now angry with herself for having been amused by writing her narrative, and grieved to think that she had for an instant thought of anything, but contriving to escape. Jemima had evidently pleasure in her society, still, though she often left her with a glow of kindness, she returned with the same chilling air, and, when her heart appeared for a moment to open, some suggestion of reason forcibly closed it, before she could give utterance to the confidence Maria's conversation inspired. Discouraged by these changes, Maria relapsed into despondency, when she was cheered by the alacrity with which Jemima brought her a fresh parcel of books, assuring her, that she had taken some pains to obtain them from one of the keepers, who attended a gentleman confined in the opposite corner of the gallery. Maria took up the books with emotion. "They come," said she, "perhaps, from a wretch condemned, like me, to reason on the nature of madness, by having wrecked minds continually under his eye, and almost to wish himself as I do mad, to escape from the contemplation of it. Her heart throbbed with sympathetic alarm, and she turned over the leaves with awe, as if they had become sacred from passing through the hands of an unfortunate being, oppressed by a similar fate. Dryden's Fables, Milton's Paradise Lost, with several modern productions, composed the collection. It was a mine of treasure. Some marginal notes, in Dryden's Fables, caught her attention. They were written with force and taste, and, in one of the modern pamphlets, there was a fragment left, containing various observations on the present state of society and government, with a comparative view of the politics of Europe and America. These remarks were written with a degree of generous warmth, when alluding to the enslaved state of the laboring majority, perfectly in unison with Maria's mode of thinking. She read them over and over again, and fancy, treacherous fancy, began to sketch a character, congenial with her own, from these shadowy outlines. Was he mad? She reperused the marginal notes, and they seemed the production of an animated, but not of a disturbed imagination. Confined to this speculation, every time she reread them, some fresh refinement of sentiment, or acuteness of thought impressed her, which she was astonished at herself for not having before observed. What a creative power has an affectionate heart! There are beings who cannot live without loving, as poets love, and who feel the electric spark of genius, wherever it awakens sentiment or grace. Maria had often thought, when disciplining her wayward heart, that to charm, was to be virtuous. They who make me wish to appear the most amiable and good in their eyes, must possess in a degree, she would exclaim, the graces and virtues they call into action. She took up a book on the powers of the human mind, but, her attention strayed from cold arguments on the nature of what she felt, while she was feeling, and she snapped the chain of the theory to read Dryden's Guiscard and Sigismunda. Maria, in the course of the ensuing day, returned some of the books, with the hope of getting others and more marginal notes. Thus shut out from human intercourse, and compelled to view nothing but the prison of vexed spirits, to meet a wretch in the same situation, was more surely to find a friend, than to imagine a countryman one, in a strange land, where the human voice conveys no information to the eager ear. "Did you ever see the unfortunate being to whom these books belong?" asked Maria, when Jemima brought her slipper. "Yes. He sometimes walks out, between 5 and 6, before the family is stirring, in the morning, with 2 keepers, but even then his hands are confined." "What? Is he so unruly?" inquired Maria, with an accent of disappointment. "No, not that I perceive," replied Jemima, "but he has an untamed look, a vehemence of eye, that excites apprehension. Were his hands free, he looks as if he could soon manage both his guards, yet he appears tranquil." "If he be so strong, he must be young," observed Maria. 3 or 34, I suppose, but there is no judging of a person in his situation." "Are you sure that he is mad?" interrupted Maria with eagerness. Jemima quitted the room, without replying. "No, no, he certainly is not," exclaimed Maria, answering herself. "The man who could write those observations was not disordered in his intellects." She sat musing, gazing at the moon, and watching its motion as it seemed to glide under the clouds. Then, preparing for bed, she thought, "Of what use could I be to him, or he to me, if it be true that he is unjustly confined? Could he aid me to escape, who is himself more closely watched? Still I should like to see him." She went to bed, dreamed of her child, yet woke exactly at 5:30, and starting up, only wrapped a gown around her, and ran to the window. The morning was chill, it was the latter end of September, yet she did not retire to warm herself and think in bed, till the sound of the servants, moving about the house, convinced her that the unknown would not walk in the garden that morning. She was ashamed at feeling disappointed, and began to reflect, as an excuse to herself, on the little objects which attract attention when there is nothing to divert the mind, and how difficult it was for women to avoid growing romantic, who have no active duties or pursuits. At breakfast, Jemima inquired whether she understood French, for, unless she did, the stranger's stock of books was exhausted. Maria replied in the affirmative, but forbore to ask any more questions respecting the person to whom they belonged. And Jemima gave her a new subject for contemplation, by describing the person of a lovely maniac, just brought into an adjoining chamber. She was singing the pathetic ballad of Old Rob with the most heart-melting falls and pauses. Jemima had half opened the door, when she distinguished her voice, and Maria stood close to it, scarcely daring to respire, lest a modulation should escape her, so exquisitely sweet, so passionately wild. She began with sympathy to portray to herself another victim, when the lovely warbler flew, as it were, from the spray, and a torrent of unconnected exclamations and questions burst from her, interrupted by fits of laughter, so horrid, that Maria shut the door, and, turning her eyes up to heaven, exclaimed, "Gracious God!" Several minutes elapsed before Maria could inquire respecting the rumor of the house, for this poor wretch was obviously not confined without a cause, and then Jemima could only tell her, that it was said, she had been married, against her inclination, to a rich old man, extremely jealous, no wonder, for she was a charming creature, and that, in consequence of his treatment, or something which hung on her mind, she had, during her first lying in, lost her senses. What a subject of meditation even to the very confines of madness! Woman, fragile flower! Why were you suffered to adorn a world exposed to the inroad of such stormy elements? Thought Maria, while the poor maniac's strain was still breathing on her ear, and sinking into her very soul. Towards the evening, Jemima brought her Rousseau's Eloise, and she sat reading with eyes and heart, till the return of her guard to extinguish the light. One instance of her kindness was, the permitting Maria to have one, till her own hour of retiring to rest. She had read this work long since, but now it seemed to open a new world to her, the only one worth inhabiting. Sleep was not to be wooed, yet, far from being fatigued by the restless rotation of thought, she rose and opened her window, just as the thin watery clouds of twilight made the long silent shadows visible. The air swept across her face with a voluptuous freshness that thrilled to her heart, awakening indefinable emotions, and the sound of a waving branch, or the twittering of a startled bird, alone broke the stillness of reposing nature. Absorbed by the sublime sensibility which renders the consciousness of existence felicity, Maria was happy, till an autumnal scent, wafted by the breeze of morn from the fallen leaves of the adjacent wood, made her recollect that the season had changed since her confinement, yet life afforded no variety to solace an afflicted heart. She returned dispirited to her couch, and thought of her child till the broad glare of day again invited her to the window. She looked not for the unknown, still how great was her vexation at perceiving the back of a man, certainly he, with his two attendants, as he turned into a side path which led to the house. A confused recollection of having seen somebody who resembled him, immediately occurred, to puzzle and torment her with endless conjectures. 5 minutes sooner, and she should have seen his face, and been out of suspense. Was ever anything so unlucky? His steady, bold step, and the whole air of his person, bursting as it were from a cloud, pleased her, and gave an outline to the imagination to sketch the individual form she wished to recognize. Feeling the disappointment more severely than she was willing to believe, she flew to Rousseau, as her only refuge from the idea of him, who might prove a friend, could she but find a way to interest him in her fate. Still the personification of Saint Preux, or of an ideal lover far superior, was after this imperfect model, of which merely a glance had been caught, even to the minutiae of the coat and hat of the stranger. But if she lent Saint Preux, or the demigod of her fancy, his form, she richly repaid him by the donation of all Saint Preux's sentiments and feelings, called to gratify her own, to which he seemed to have an undoubted right, when she read on the margin of an impassioned letter, written in the well-known hand, "Rousseau alone, the true Prometheus of sentiment, possessed the fire of genius necessary to portray the passion, the truth of which goes so directly to the heart." Maria was again true to the hour, yet had finished Rousseau, and begun to transcribe some selected passages, unable to quit either the author or the window, before she had a glimpse of the countenance she daily longed to see, and, when seen, it conveyed no distinct idea to her mind where she had seen it before. He must have been a transient acquaintance, but to discover an acquaintance was fortunate, could she contrive to attract his attention, and excite his sympathy? Every glance afforded coloring for the picture she was delineating on her heart, and once, when the window was half open, the sound of his voice reached her. Conviction flashed on her, she had certainly, in a moment of distress, heard the same accents. They were manly, and characteristic of a noble mind, nay, even sweet or sweet they seemed to her attentive ear. She started back, trembling, alarmed at the emotion a strange coincidence of circumstances inspired, and wondering why she thought so much of a stranger, obliged as she had been by his timely interference. For she recollected, by degrees, all the circumstances of their former meeting. She found, however, that she could think of nothing else, or, if she thought of her daughter, it was to wish that she had a father whom her mother could respect and love. Chapter 3. When perusing the first parcel of books, Maria had, with her pencil, written in one of them a few exclamations, expressive of compassion and sympathy, which she scarcely remembered, till turning over the leaves of one of the volumes, lately brought to her, a slip of paper dropped out, which Jemima hastily snatched up. "Let me see it," demanded Maria impatiently. "You surely are not afraid of trusting me with the effusions of a madman?" "I must consider," replied Jemima, and withdrew, with the paper in her hand. In a life of such seclusion, the passions gain undue force. Maria therefore felt a great degree of resentment and vexation, which she had not time to subdue, before Jemima, returning, delivered the paper. "Whoever you are, who partake of my fate, accept my sincere commiseration." I would have said protection, but the privilege of man is denied me. My own situation forces a dreadful suspicion on my mind. I may not always languish in vain for freedom. Say are you? I cannot ask the question, yet I will remember you when my remembrance can be of any use. I will inquire why you are so mysteriously detained, and I will have an answer. Henry Darnford. By the most pressing entreaties, Maria prevailed on Jemima to permit her to write a reply to this note. Another and another succeeded, in which explanations were not allowed relative to their present situation, but Maria, with sufficient explicitness, alluded to a former obligation, and they insensibly entered on an interchange of sentiments on the most important subjects. To write these letters was the business of the day, and to receive them the moment of sunshine. By some means, Darnford having discovered Maria's window, when she next appeared at it, he made her, behind his keepers, a profound bow of respect and recognition. 2 or 3 weeks glided away in this kind of intercourse, during which period Jemima, to whom Maria had given the necessary information respecting her family, had evidently gained some intelligence, which increased her desire of pleasing her charge, though she could not yet determine to liberate her. Maria took advantage of this favorable charge, without too minutely inquiring into the cause, and such was her eagerness to hold human converse, and to see her former protector, still a stranger to her, that she incessantly requested her guard to gratify her more than curiosity. Writing to Darnford, she was led from the sad objects before her, and frequently rendered insensible to the horrid noises around her, which previously had continually employed her feverish fancy. Thinking it selfish to dwell on her own sufferings, when in the midst of wretches, who had not only lost all that endears life, but their very selves, her imagination was occupied with melancholy earnestness to trace the mazes of misery, through which so many wretches must have passed to this gloomy receptacle of disjointed souls, to the grand source of human corruption. Often at midnight was she waked by the dismal shrieks of demoniac rage, or of excruciating despair, uttered in such wild tones of indescribable anguish as proved the total absence of reason, and roused phantoms of horror in her mind, far more terrific than all that dreaming superstition ever drew. Besides, there was frequently something so inconceivably picturesque in the varying gestures of unrestrained passion, so irresistibly comic in their sallies, or so heart-piercingly pathetic in the little airs they would sing, frequently bursting out after an awful silence, as to fascinate the attention, and amuse the fancy, while torturing the soul. It was the uproar of the passions which she was compelled to observe, and to mark the lucid beam of reason, like a light trembling in a socket, or like the flash which divides the threatening clouds of angry heaven only to display the horrors which darkness shrouded. Jemima would labor to beguile the tedious evenings, by describing the persons and manners of the unfortunate beings, whose figures or voices awoke sympathetic sorrow in Maria's bosom, and the stories she told were the more interesting, for perpetually leaving room to conjecture something extraordinary. Still Maria, accustomed to generalize her observations, was led to conclude from all she heard, that it was a vulgar error to suppose that people of abilities were the most apt to lose the command of reason. On the contrary, from most of the instances she could investigate, she thought it resulted, that the passions only appeared strong and disproportioned, because the judgment was weak and unexercised, and that they gained strength by the decay of reason.